What is in your life's blueprint?
Wait, were you with us at One Art when we were drinking the coconut water?
No.
Have you drank in water out of a coconut?
No, but I hate coconut water. Oh, yeah, I did, actually. When we were at Puerto Rico, the man gave me some.
Did you like it?
No, I don't like coconut. I'm sorry, there's coconut water in that. There's 5% coconut water.
All the natural ways of you obtaining water you don't like.
No, I don't. I really don't.
You want this processed YouTube-based water.
True.
Okay.
And I was going to pour Red Bull into it, too.
No.
If We Love Philly had its own.
Prime.
Yeah, what would it be called?
Love. I don't know. Sauce.
Sauce.
Saucy.
Yeah, start drinking some sauce. That'd be crazy. People have to try it. They'd have to try it. Anyways. Yo. Hello. And welcome back to the We Love Philly podcast. Hope you're having a great day. As we explore volunteerism together while we promote the dope people and organizations that lead that way. Today is a very special episode because after a short break, we're returning with everyone's favorite co-host, Mr. Carlos Aponte. Yes, welcome, Carlos. Welcome back. How do you feel?
That's a great question.
I'm
feeling comfortable. I am sitting
very
on
comfortable.
I have my shoes on the couch. Sorry, Rec Philly. Take me out of my home, and I just start. I start acting like a wild person. I feel great. I'm coming back from a wedding in Florida. I have a broken wrist that's healing rapidly, and I will not have a cast on it in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to all the growth and all of the new things that I have been learning, and all of the things that I have been having to let go of that no longer serve me.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to it.
So inspirational. If Carlos is not the only one sitting on that couch next to me, would you like to introduce who's next to you?
No.
You should. Oh, dang. I will, because today is an amazing guest, Miss Zoraida Cordero. Was that good? Cordero.
Yeah, I tried to tell him how to.
Cordero.
I tried to tell him how to do it. That's why I wanted him to say it, because we were practicing it before you got here.
I'm really bad at Spanish.
Let's try it. I want to hear you try at least with some passion and emphasis on that R.
Cordero. No, I can't, bro.
Cordero.
I really want to learn Spanish. This is a bucket list thing.
Just listen to some Bad Bunny. I heard it helps.
Yeah, I love Bad Bunny. Yeah. I mean, my second half, gang. Yeah, she's here from Impact Solutions. An amazing person. Would you like to share more about yourself for those who don't know at home?
Sure. Hi, everyone. First of all, thank you for having me.
Of course.
And for those who don't know me, I am a short, very powerful Latina, born and raised in New York City and transplanted into Allentown, living in Philly now. I am a macro social worker by trade, but a community helper and influencer by just nature to help people thrive. I like to help youth connect and find their power to be successful, and through that just holistically support people, which involves a community, nonprofit organizations, leadership, local leaders, and many other ways of supporting. So that's me in a nutshell, I think. Best way to describe myself.
Dope. My first time meeting you was when we did a volunteer event not too long ago. That was the last year, right? The end of last year?
The back to school?
First it was Halloween, which is October of last year.
Yeah, but before that, didn't you do the book bag drive?
No. Were you at the end of the year, John?
I was at the end of the year, John.
So it was end of the year. Halloween.
What was the book bag one?
In the back to school.
That was first.
Yep.
I was at back to school, but I was definitely at back the end of the year, John and Halloween. Yeah. But they were both amazing. They were both super fire experiences. Yeah. Bro, the amount of people that showed up and were ready to put all their effort into the community, and then the amount of community members that showed up and were excited to do things, were just like enjoying the experiences. I haven't had an event like that in a long time. Like diving into more behind the scenes things and like digital marketing and stuff like that. I haven't really had a time to go out and volunteer as much as I used to. And after doing that and like creating that experience and being part of it, it was fun as hell. It was a great experience.
I suffered from a
Didn't you all build the haunted house?
Yeah, and we all got to make it together, and then I was a skeleton king.
Yes.
Yes, and I was in front of the haunted house where we had like tons and tons of kids.
It was amazing. Flood. It was very powerful.
I didn't know you had a cape. I'm jealous. Good, my wife bought me a cape for Christmas.
You bought me that cape.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, I still have it.
Go We Love Philly. It's I did, really or nice We Love cape. Philly did?
We Love Philly bought me that cape.
No, but it was, I think they were great. They were great events for that area, and that hadn't happened in a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
And you did that through Safe Hub.
Yeah.
How Safe Hub? Do you miss it?
I do. I miss the community aspect of it 1,000%. What I can share about being at Safe Hub and doing the community events wasn't one of the top priorities, but it's one of my strengths. And the way I think is we can do special activities and connect people through resources or academia and sports, but if you're not connecting everything together and celebrating it, the impact's going to be limited. And one of the things that I noticed was North Philly has a lot of negative things behind it, and people can say what they want to say, but if you don't take action, then it's going to continue to get worse. So, Safe Hub's doing soccer and kicking the ball. They wanted a permanent space, and they wound up in Scanlon. And we did a cleanup in Scanlon because Scanlon looked like no one had lived there in a long time, except for people who are unfortunately experiencing homelessness. Yeah. And in order to make sure that space was safe, then you had to have it and use it daily. So we did this major cleanup. I think it was like over 150 bags of trash that was collected. And through that, the park started to rehabilitate itself and people were using it, and now it was safer. And it's really interesting to say, but it's like we had a unspoken of agreement with the individual experiencing homelessness, as in, y'all can have it to space, just make sure that when there's programming or in certain hours, you keep it clean and step outside and make sure that it's safe for the kids. And it started to be cleaner. And it was so powerful to see that magic piece of giving the community back their space. Like, you could use the space. We could help you through these events. Now we're doing the back to school, like we did the Easter event. Then we had like Halloween's around the corner, and we did it at the other park that we were in. But I'm like, this needs to happen here.
Yeah.
And through the rec center, shout out to Eric and everyone in the Scanlon Rec Center and We Love Philly. Y'all were awesome. It's having these people who believe in that same idea of and philosophy that if we rehabilitate the space, we're giving community members back their ownership to telling us how they want the space to look like, be used. But also, when we're not here, y'all can use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And meeting people with humanity, which is so lost in that neighborhood, because people are always seen as the other, or as, hey, you're less than, or hey, you're causing this problem. But it's like, no, let's have conversations, because it's not about us. You centered the kids who are going to be using the space, the community members, and just how empowering that is. And that's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, I love that.
Nice. You know what? I don't know. I'm not one to exclude anybody, and y'all know that. Mm-hmm. I'm very welcoming, and I think working together, you get more done. Like, we had resource events, and the Thanksgiving drive, individuals came and grabbed, and we didn't exclude anybody, because everyone's in need. And I think it's really finding the balance as to how we communicate, how we connect, and then also where we set boundaries and what that looks like. But if we're not speaking about these things, and we're just polarizing or doing it in a divisive manner, regardless of what everyone's opinions are, then you're going to make it really hard for the community to rehabilitate itself. And one of the things I learned while working there is there's a lot of opinions. It's a lot of politics. And if we keep focusing on the opinions that people have to say in positions of leadership, these opinions are what are creating the barriers for the resources and for the impact. So that was something that I shut down. It's I'm going to do it the best way that I feel works, but it's not my way. It's based off of what you all have to say in your buy-in. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, then we need to reinvent the wheel and change it and make it work for you. I don't know. I think I don't want to assume, but I feel like I have a different way of doing things.
Yeah.
I'm very unorthodox, to say the least.
Yeah.
No, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
That's, we experienced something similar when we had the grand opening of the shipping container. We got a whole bunch of food catered. Shout out to, what is it? Cantina La Martina.
Oh, they
Or is it the other way around? I always get it mixed up.
I think it's Cantina La Martina.
Yeah. So they catered, and then we have the we had all the food there, and then people from the community were coming into the event to grab food, and I had a couple students who were like, "What?" And then it was like, "Hey, this is where they live. This is their community. How do we, like you just said, set the boundaries? Let them know that what this space is going to be, because they're all going to be out front of this space when we're not here. So how do you give them an experience and an event that they'll remember, so they know, hey, this is actually going to be a safe space for young people to come and work, to come and learn, and can we all do our part to make it safe? And if we can, then of course when we have all of these events, you're more than welcome because you are a part of this community. And no, that's definitely from my experience how that should go and how it works. You have to meet people with humanity, and so often the missing piece, especially with people in power, because from my experience, they don't meet themselves with humanity. Yeah. And then they're just constantly stuck in a, someone is out to get me paranoia, or I need to hoard and I need to make sure that no one else has, because if they have, I won't.
Yeah.
And then they take that and then they spread that. And it sucks because they're in power, so that affects more than just them.
That's a good point to make. If you want to think about the philosophy and the privilege or opportunity, I'll speak to the first one. Philosophy, it could be that you have had the opportunity and you've experienced vulnerability and you've experienced poverty. And then with that philosophy, you can say, I want to either empower or make it more accessible for others to not have to experience what I did, and or you transform the narrative where you want to disassociate, become hungry for power, and neglect where you came from and neglect those who are experiencing what you're experiencing, while the agenda is that you're doing something good, but you're truly not. And I think it's really there's two different philosophies for that. And all of that could go back into privilege and opportunity, where on my token, I experience poverty and I experience different things. I was in line when the church with my mom grabbing food, and I didn't reflect on that until maybe 3 years ago, where I was like, wow, what would happen if these resources are no longer available?
Yeah.
But I say that to say, where I went to school, I'm a veteran, and I have benefits to be able to educate myself with my master's, and I took social work because, I don't know, I felt I was really good at it in psychology, right? That allowed me to understand how the brain works and functions, and then how the external environment impact people. So I have this knowledge that allows me to see things from a different perspective that I know other people don't have access to. How I use that knowledge could be detrimental or supportive. And I don't necessarily want to say there's like a 0 to 100 or right or wrong way, but you could see how people in power have that same knowledge and choose to either not share it or choose to use it to manipulate people who don't have access to that knowledge.
Yeah.
And I hear what you're saying, because it's like we have to set that boundary. But if we all really were human, engaging humanly and talking about experience from a human way, we may not agree in everything, but we can compromise in the actual mission of how do we make this a safe space?
Yeah. How much do you think your grasp of psychology, and not only that, tied with your morals, how much do you think that has moved you in life? Because that's one of my favorite subjects. I love seeing what makes a person do what they do. So I just wanted to get that from your perspective.
Sure. That's a great question, because we're like, how do you go from psychology to social work? Very easy, actually. The way that your brain is developed, it could be impacted by the parents that made you, right? And genetics, DNA. But then when you add how you're brought up and how the cognitive behavior is faced is built off of that, that goes into parenting style, and it goes into family dynamics or into nurture, and different things will impact how that brain works and functions and how your body reacts to it. To then jumping into mental health disorders and wellness and well-being, and how important it is to assess and evaluate all of those things to actually transform and evolve and heal is extremely important in social work and in anything that we do. I think we're very privileged to an extent as how vulnerable now we are to talking about mental health. And there's still so much more work to do, but you could look at it through the generations that when we didn't talk about mental health, how it affected burnout, how it affected how different generations were brought up, how it affected economy or societies and people. So when you think about your specific mental health and when you think about the resources that are available to you, if you have the tools accessible or if you understand how your psyche functions and you are okay to embrace that, because the other thing is you can know, but if you don't believe it, then the reality of you making changes is very limited.
Yeah.
But if you understand and someone kindly walks you through that process, then it's easy to evolve. And I think there is so much value. And there's different types of psychological evaluations and approaches you have. For me, I love the neurobiomechanics approach to brain and behavior. Why? Because it's like understanding that your body is a car or a whole, it's a running machine, and your brain is the engine of the car. There are certain oils that are in there, certain machinery or things that are just put into place to make that brain work. Sometimes certain things fall off of that, or sometimes certain things are old and outdated and you need to change the pieces so that your car is functioning. If you are trying to change a lifestyle, but you haven't really understood how certain things cause a reaction to a behavior, then the best example I can give you, because if I go into that, they're really like, what? If let's say I want to lose 30 pounds in two months, the reality of you doing that, if you do an extreme diet and go through it, which is very unhealthy, it could happen. But because you didn't have a specific goal or you didn't understand why this was important to you and how this would impact your life specifically, the reality of you gaining back that weight after you meet your goal is going to happen rapidly. So it's looking at it that way of, how do I become a better person, or how do I become more confident? Where is your lack of confidence coming from, or lack of insecurity coming from? And it's really breaking through those layers to change the behavior. One of the things that I've brought up in my civic engagement class was, it is related to brain behavior, for those who don't believe when they hear this, your views and your opinions.
Yeah.
You're brought up by your parents who have institutionalized their values and their beliefs.
Exactly.
And when you're an adult now, you're like, oh, I don't really agree with this view or this opinion, but then you feel some type of way about it. And then it's like, all right, if I change this, what does this say about me? And then it does start altering behaviors in the brain, because you're going to react differently to people and societies based off deciding how much of what you've learned you keep, how much of what you've learned you decide to get rid of and replace with different things that are more helpful for you.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite psychologist?
My favorite?
Yeah.
Carlos Aponte. No, I honestly don't have one, because like I said, with me, it's very tied to morals too. I think that the world is always going to have more information as it goes. So no matter what, whoever's thinking the fastest in the most purest way will be the best psychologist. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they would have a name.
Yeah.
But I think it would be a person that's doing something.
What are you most interested in? Are you most interested in behavior? Are you most interested in these are the different parts of the brain? Mm-hmm. Are you interested in childhood development to adulthood?
More so that, because that's what I study the most, because I feel like that has the most impact and the most seeable impact. Mm-hmm. And it's also very confused a lot too, because some things can develop from other things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that's like probably the biggest and the baddest of them all. I would tackle that first.
Yeah, so that's Eric Erickson.
Eric Erickson, yo, that's a sick name, Eric. Yeah. Erickson.
Yeah, he has the, I think it's Eric Erickson, the stages of development.
Stages of development, yes.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to start there, there's a bunch of other competing theories, but
there are.
Yeah, but that's a good place. That's a good place to start if you're just on your journey.
Yeah, because like you said, looking at the body as like maybe a computer or something, you have to unlearn and delete like old things that are like wired in your brain for you to think a certain type of way, because some people are just brought up in ways where it's very hard to unlearn things and it's very hard to see the impact of what you're doing. But like you said, if you show someone a different way, a group of leaders, a group of people who are all sharing this like mind motive, they come in and then they can like change that. They can help you change that, and they can give you a route. So now we have like great places to stay and better communities and better organizations because we're coming together more.
That's where the social work piece comes in too.
Yeah.
Because psychologists, they can look at culture and values and beliefs, but the social work piece will talk to you about that. Where
exactly.
Maybe the psychologist will tell you, we'll change these behaviors and implement these tools for you to be able to transform. But then the social work aspect is talking through that process of you're not no longer a part of your culture, or you don't no longer belong. You do. You're just doing things differently. And finding ways to set a boundary and to express yourself to protect your safety and your growth, it helps you, one, not only change the culture in a positive way, but also influence other people in your direct community or family to say, oh, we got to do some healing too. And that, I think that's where it's at that golden thread of, this is why I do it this way, because it is hard. I don't know. I grew up Spanish, and I don't know what your experience was like at home, but certain things that I do, I was like, really? Like not talking to me for 3 months? Mom, I need to heal through some stuff right now. And
yeah.
And trying to explain that to somebody,
exactly.
Your parents, first of all, that's very hard.
You don't eat meat? What?
You're working, you can't talk right now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You better speak to me right now, boy.
Yeah. How does your background help with your work now and what you do?
So with Impactful Solutions, it helps me just because of understanding the opportunities I have are not opportunities that are available to other people. So specifically speaking on grassroots nonprofit organizations, many of the grassroots leaders don't have a master's degree or have access to the education and resources I have. And even if they did, it's not the most adaptive. And I can speak from the experience of me being in the classroom, feeling like I didn't belong because I didn't speak in an elite manner or eloquently as other people. Not that I limit people, but I try to find the best way to translate what I'm learning so that other people can understand. So it's, how do we organize your business? Or how do we build a logic model? And what does that look like? How do I make that make sense to you in a way that you understand where it's coming from? It's easy, but also know that you're not alone. And using that approach for me has allowed me to not only engage grassroots leaders, but engage community members and share my knowledge in a way that doesn't push anyone away or make them feel like they don't belong. More of, oh, I get it, I understand. So the example of community engagement with Safe Hub. Although I worked with Safe Hub, that's a part of my philosophy with engaging communities, where I asked them how they felt about something, or if their needs were being met specifically, or what their concerns were. Using that approach gave me the opportunity to then follow up with the community members to say, wow, this has never happened in my community. Thank you so much for doing this in a way that felt like a celebration and not as if we were in need. And that sticks with me today for many reasons, because my professionalism supports me in so many ways, but my experience and I believe my approach to just being morally ethical and being a human has allowed me to not act as this professional and like, oh, look at all these things I got. No, my GPA is great, but I'm not better than the next person. And I think it's helped me in that specific way. I don't brag. I hope I don't. I try my best not to brag about anything, but it truly has developed my approach and engagement with people. It's just adaptive, reflective, and again, I recognize my privilege.
How do you balance? I'm noticing this more in the last year. I have a similar philosophy as you, but I'm starting to notice more and more that I have to lead with my ego a little bit more, because being too humble isn't getting you where you need to go in order to be of service to as many people as you can be. Yeah, yeah. So what's your knowingness around that topic, and like, how do you balance your humility with knowing that you have an ego and knowing that it does serve a purpose and it can be used for good? Or do you think it's just, no, get rid of that completely?
If we're going to be honest, it would be nice if we could all use our ego and balance the humbleness, right? But it's easier for you to do it than it is for a woman to do it. Ego for a woman is seen like she's a diva, and or she's catty, or she thinks she knows it all. And I'm sharing that because I've had to learn how to turn off those thoughts and know when my ego is being used for good. If I really know this is the best way of doing something, I'm going to put my foot down and take the challenges and know that in the background, I'm going to hear, oh, she thinks she knows what she's doing and she thinks she's better than everyone. And it does happen that way and it sucks. So I agree. And again, it's just, if you can add, it is so much more easier for a man to be received with his ego in a table than it is for a woman. And I've been trying for the past, I want to say, 2 years to confidently own that, that I own my knowledge, to not sit down or sit quiet when I know something's wrong. Actually, no, I lie. Maybe 4 years now. Because if you don't, you get pushed over.
Yeah.
And if I get pushed over, you're going to push over the people I'm supporting.
Exactly.
And I think that's where it's important. So I, yes, we should keep it when it's used correctly, but it's so much harder for a girl or for a woman. I'm not a girl anymore. I think it's something that also needs to be spoken about, because in cultures is also hard too, right? Yeah. Depending on the community that you're in, some women can't speak or share their thoughts, or it's not really looked up a certain way. I could speak from my experience growing up in a home where the man is the head of the household. And as a very young girl, I was like, nah, mom does everything. You're just a provider. And to say that to a man is, who are you? Why would you say that? But I didn't say it, young me was saying it like that, clearly she could have said that much better. As an adult, I understand that there was no malice in that. It was more saying, I see the value that this woman brings to my household. She's my mother and she does a lot, and I see the value you bring to my household, but you both in my eyes are equal too, and I respect you equally. And stepping into spaces that way, I guess has allowed me to improve how I've said that. I hear what you're saying and I understand that you may be leading this space, but I am an expert, or I am at least very knowledgeable in this specific area. Allow me to try this. Let's pilot this. And if it doesn't work, then we'll pivot and we'll discuss what's best. But I think it's a part of the communication of when your ego, is your ego striking emotionally or is your ego striking rationally and trying to get a message across? So I'm gonna throw it right back at you.
I think at least my personal struggle with it is growing up and having an ego as a way to protect the inner child within me that wasn't loved. So I would use my ego as my shelter to lead me and hurt as many people as possible or not be a good person so I didn't have to feel my own personal pain. And then when I came to that realization and noticed it, then it was, I need to get rid of this because this doesn't serve me. And I've never lived from a place of humility and admitting and not knowing and being vulnerable. So then I did that for so many years, and that was this journey of building We Love Philly. And now I'm starting to see that I need to let it back into my life a little bit, because it will give me access to power, which I think needs to be redefined as using the ego and gaining power in order to gain more responsibility to be of service to who needs to be served. So if I am dealing with an authoritative man or an authoritative woman and they're doing A, B, and C, but I'm viewing it as, you are not using your power with that grain of responsibility that needs to be there. So now what is my own personal boundary around that? And am I willing to walk away from that knowing that this is the lesson that it's trying to teach me? And then how can I now use this boundary to now take the power that is needed in order to take the responsibility, in order to spread the responsibility, in order to share the responsibility with the people that I serve. Mm. Yeah, I feel like the whole top-down power thing is dying and dead. I definitely agree with you. It's way harder for a woman, but I think in the new world that our generation is building, I don't see it as much as a gender thing anymore, or it's not going to be that. It's going to be who is keeping their word, who is sharing responsibility, and who is leading with that humility, but at the same time willing to speak up what you do, speak up for those community members who might still be stuck in that old paradigm. I think that's what's beautiful about our generation, is that we are in between the last one and the one that is coming. So we can see what didn't work, and we can see the other side of the pendulum, and we can be that balance as long as we're able to be better communicators. And I think that's why I need to tap into my ego a little bit more, because it stops me from, when it's not present, I don't communicate to the masses on a bigger scale because I don't think that my voice is valued, or I don't think that, or I think that people already know what I'm going to say. So why am I saying it? This is obvious to everyone, when I'm learning through my movings this past year that it's not obvious, and people actually are looking up to me and they're like, what's the next move? And it's, oh snap. Like I thought you knew better. And it's no, like we need to know better. How do I frame the systems in place to where we are really sharing that responsibility, and we're not othering power. I think same with money, power gets a dirty rap. When with great power comes great responsibility. Yes. Yeah. If you want that power, cool, let's get it. How is our responsibility growing over time to the people that we are serving? And are we centering their voices, and are we giving them the platform? And are we, just like Zoraida said, if they push me over, they're pushing over everyone that is counting on me, and everyone that I am serving, and everyone that's holding me up and putting me on their shoulders to be that beacon of light for other people.
Wow.
That's powerful.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, from the other side of it, I haven't even thought about that yet. Like, that point, I have been under the impression that I completely eliminate my ego from anything. From my experiences and what I go through, what I went through, I feel like exactly what you said, I don't want anyone to look at that to me. I've always done that in my life. There's scenarios that I don't want to have to ever undergo, and I don't want someone to see me as that. So therefore, I feel as though I don't have the right to do that, or I'm not ready to do that, because I don't want anyone to mistake me for anything, you know what I mean? And then to the same side as that, I don't want people to look at me. I'm using this power in my sense of just seeing me. Oh, you're just, oh, like you think you're this big and bad because you look like this, because this and that. I don't want people to like do that, because I have a slight bit of ego, so I just eliminate it. But speaking of what you said, it is like that. I get less opportunity to walk up to somebody because of anxiety, because of this, that, and the third. I don't get as many opportunities because I'm not sharing my complete value, because I don't believe in my value. And I feel like that's a pendulum that's very hard to balance on. Mm. Yeah.
But I think it's powerful when you start to tap into it, because I agree with you. It's shifting, and it's much easier now. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But when you're thinking about motivation and how do you get through stuff in life, when you put your mind to something, that's your ego. It's, I got this. I can get through this. And I think there's a double standard to it. And then also, not to get social worky in the space, but really thinking about when people are giving you the power to have ego, it's pick and choose how you're going to learn something. And are we building systems and societies to truly oppress people and oppress what ego looks like for them and power looks like for them, for other people who break through these systems to use this power and their ego in a negative way?
Yeah.
So I think if we shift it where we do find the right balance of how to use power and responsibility, but also to share ego and to demonstrate a healthy way to have it, because yes, you learned it through different traumas that you experienced, right? And maybe you hurt people and you said you were mean. Me, for ego, I used it as an adult, where I got this. I got through the military. I went to school. I can put my mind through it. But I will tell you, I didn't really have ego as a child, because I was told that I'm the example, and how dare I think I'm better than, or how dare I not be there for someone. And I was taught that it was like, ego is selfish. Thinking about you is the wrong thing to do. Unlearning that was a whole trauma experience for me of, no, putting myself first is important, but also standing up for other people is important. And how I connected the two was because I didn't stand up for myself as a child. To learn to stand up for myself as an adult was a challenge. But then also, when you experience it and when you're ready, you will be, you're gonna have to decide whether I stand up for myself and screw what people say. Because I am gonna have to be confrontational at one point. And I think it's the growing pain of, it's not gonna come out perfect, because someone's gonna say something regardless.
Yeah. But through can't that, be liked by everyone.
It is a dog eat dog world.
Yeah.
So I don't wanna eat anybody by any means. I wanna be able to at least truly kill you with kindness, as best to say it, but also be firm with it. And sometimes some people are gonna get burned and some people are gonna get hurt. But if I hurt one to save 100, I'll take hurting your feelings to save 100. And I think that is ego. I can pick and choose that. And that's okay. But it really is depending on, to me, it's the trauma. It's what you're experiencing. Yeah. So just going back to what Carlos asked, like, how do I bring my professional background into everything that I do? How did it lead up to this? Now I currently work at AFSP, which is American Foundation for Suicide and Prevention. I'm the area director for the Greater Philadelphia, which is Bucks County, Delaware, Chester County, Montgomery County, and Philly.
Congratulations.
Thanks. But the way it just brings me into this AFSP nonprofit is, the keyword is suicide. And unfortunately, a lot of individuals in society are struggling with mental health. And ultimately, you want to avoid people going through suicide or experiencing suicidal thoughts and what that looks like. And suicidality as a whole spectrum and what that looks like is something that's not really spoken about.
Yeah.
And when we don't talk about mental health in our communities and we don't intentionally provide resources to either discuss mental health or receive services on mental health, well-being, and or counseling or working out, the chances of suicide increase, because now you feel alone and you don't feel seen or heard. And what led me to being with AFSP is my connection to the cause of having individuals in the service, where, you know, as I was in the Army Reserve, go through, unfortunately, mental health illness and unfortunately commit the act of suicide. And seeing people in my community and my friends are experiencing dark thoughts and thinking, I'm that lifeline right now. And how sad I would be if one of my dear friends went through that, or hearing it from family members that these are thoughts that they have and they've never shared it before, and mental health was not really spoken about in my home, to now are like 100 steps in and it's like we're talking about suicide. Yeah. It's a lot, and it really makes you think, one, we're in the right direction now, we're talking about it, but two, how did we get here and why didn't we prevent this? So also just speaking about my friends who are police officers and first line responders, they go through so much tragic, traumatic experiences with sometimes not having someone to share it with, and those thoughts consume you and it leads to acts of suicide, and how preventable it could have been if we just remove the masculinity behind it, that we don't talk about mental health in the force, mm-hmm. even in the military. And that's where it goes down to. And then in our homes, oh, it's just go to church.
Yeah.
It's okay if you have faith, and it's okay if you pray and you practice your faith 100% of the time. But if your faith isn't allowing you to express what you're feeling, your faith isn't going to save the next step items, right? And I think it's looking at it that way of removing the taboo to talking about mental health so that we prevent suicidality. And that's the goal with AFSP right now, a Project 2025. They want to reduce suicide by 20%. Yeah. Obviously, it's going to take a community of community members, families, different organizations and different key leaders to get involved, but we can't glamorize the idea of it anymore and just talk about it without having resources for it. And I believe that's where I'm at, where every time I connected with the communities or I built events, you could tell that there's struggle. And poverty impacts your mental health. Not having a welcoming environment impacts your mental health.
100%.
And not having food or not being accepted or not being welcome, all of that impacts your mental health. And when we're not thinking of it that way, or we're not approaching these situations in that holistic manner, not necessarily it's someone to blame, but are we really doing our best to keep people alive and to have them live? We're creating survivors.
Yeah, they're not living, they're just surviving.
Like, why do we believe it's okay to create a survival mindset without taking into consideration the reality of burnout?
Yeah.
When you're consistently on fight, you have flight or flight, you're consistently in fight mode, your brain's going to burn out, you're going to be tired. That could look different for many people. If we don't start to reduce the fight and we don't start developing communities, speaking about mental health, providing resources, transforming education and transforming equitable access to actual things that we need in our communities, we're not going to help anyone's mental health. And that's what brought me to AFSP. But also that brings me into my philosophy. I have the corniest saying in the world, but I live by this. A smile goes a long way. And it's something so simple. But because of what I've seen and what I've experienced, you don't, and this is personal to me, you don't know what someone's struggling with. And when I have gone through some really dark times and someone has smiled at me, it's, oh, thanks for, you acknowledged me, you saw me.
Yeah.
And it is so simple, but you truly could save a life with a smile. Maybe you're the only person they've connected with. And to that same point, people think that when you're in a dark space, people will tell you, oh, it's not that bad. People go through worse. And I was speaking to someone recently about this during our campus. It's not necessarily that people go through worse and yours is invalid. It's the concept of the fact that you're going through something.
Yeah, exactly.
And that something is big enough for you to handle, but not for somebody else to handle. And you could never and should never compare someone else's struggle to yours, because it's unfortunate, but it really is like food intake. A baby eats X amount of food and so on and so forth. Adults, they eat a certain portion of food based on their body, their mass, their height, their weight. Why can't we look at experiences that same way?
Exactly.
You are taking what this is the most for you, and that's okay. It might not be the most for me, and that's okay too, but I'm never going to compare you or make you feel like you can't share that with me. Because the moment that happens, we create silos. And you are putting people in a corner or in a space of not feeling seen, not feeling heard, validated. And for many other words, it's, you don't matter.
Yeah.
Your opinion is, no, it's not that bad. You'll be all right. It's all right. And then what happens when they're gone?
Yeah, exactly.
Was that really helpful? Or when someone's, I'm really going through something. Oh, did you seek therapy? That's not why I'm saying I'm going through something right now. I just wanted you to listen to me. And I think those are also key concepts with being in this space. It's actively listening. Are you really listening? Are you truly seeing things? And are you connecting? Are you pretending to connect? I think all of that is so important. In connection, I could speak as simple as, I am Latina. I'm Puerto Rican and Peruvian. Grew up in New York City. I grew up in a community that, for all I knew, I grew up poor, but I didn't feel like I was poor. I felt like I was rich because I had everything I needed. I still struggled, but my parents gave me a lot. To now being being a professional in many ways.
Yeah.
And going back to communities and they looking at you like, you don't fit in. Who are you?
That's
like,
crazy.
You ain't one of us. And I get that because I'm not in your situation anymore. And I respect that. And you get more done acknowledging that than trying to be like, I'm just like you. Why don't you see me? And that's that ego that comes in, that negative hate. I hear you. But I can get you to not exactly where I'm at, people to a position that's better than where you are at right now. We could talk about that. I understand because I no longer can relate to you.
Yeah.
And that gets more done in mental health and in connection with people because you are listening, you are in tune. It is that whole concept of looking at the whole individual, and I do believe it saves lives when you at least connect that way.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Without really making it about you.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you do make it about you, your mental health is going to struggle too with that.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel we lose our sense of communication with each other. Like we for whatever reason, we don't want to speak about things and we don't want to speak to each other. And that becomes a root of a lot of problems. Like the way that you say things and you choosing not to say things is a big problem that people don't really see as a problem because a lot of people are very self-centered and focused on their personal way. And if you can explain something away, it doesn't mean that someone else is going to understand that. And yeah, treating people, well, quite literally treating people the way you wanted to be treated is something you should always do because you, like you said, you never know what someone is going through. Because like you said, it's very hard. Like as people, we hate to see other people go through stuff. Like we care about each other. We are just alike. Like I could understand what it feels like to be in your shoes. And I don't want to see you in pain. But even it takes an even stronger person to be able to give that person back their humanity in that mm-hmm. type of sense.
I think there's so much growth that needs to happen. I think that's so important, and I wish more people led that way.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a lot of harm that's being done. And when you go back to mental health, again, do we want someone to tell your story, or do we want to give people the power to tell their story?
Yeah.
Why is it that I'm continuously telling people's story?
Yeah.
That's not the way it should be. The reality is, do good enough for us to no longer exist because we did a good job.
Exactly.
I had a mentor of mine from Muhlenberg College. And at first, when I heard her advice, I was like, what do you mean? But she was like, there's a right time. And your way of thinking, it's not, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not the time.
Yeah.
People aren't ready. Or people don't understand. And I remember I was kind of like, what do you mean? But when you start to realize that society is shifting and not everyone's on your page, it's kind of like, all right, it is progressive. We want society to transform at the snap of our fingers, and it's not. And I think it's so important to acknowledge that and to share what she said because you are valuable. And I'm sharing this to whoever's listening. Maybe your philosophy is perfect, but maybe it's a prize that we shouldn't share with the world yet because they're not ready. The yeah. last thing you want to do is get shut down.
Exactly.
And I think when you realize that it's like, all right, I'm ready to bloom, I'm ready to step into it and own it, there's no one that could deteriorate that. And I'm so grateful for that advice of it's perfect, you're doing fine, it's not you, it's just not the right time.
Yeah.
It will be. And in this work, the right time is when you feel you're ready, and the right time is when you find a community of people with you. And it is, right now, it is the right time. And it's, I think it's being open to progression. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
But I do believe that in my lifetime, I'm going to see good change. And my whole mission in life is I want to be able to know that I help many people. I want to go off this world knowing that I helped and I did it the right way. Specifically, people is youth, you. I want to make sure that I did my due diligence to clean up your community, to connect with your educational system and give you ample amount of opportunities to succeed. If we aren't doing that, then we're creating a world that's just going to tear itself down.
Yeah.
We're struggling as adults because we weren't taken serious.
Yeah.
So why would we not listen to youth
exactly.
who are going through the same thing, maybe different generations and different problems, but it's really leading with the, let me listen to what you're going through. Your experience is valid and it's as strong as you feel it is exactly how I'm going to receive it because it's to you. I do believe that I will live my mission that way, helping more people. And I'm hoping that other people find value in that because if not, we really aren't it's not about the success for us. To me, it's a success for humanity. That's my mission in life. If I get rich doing that, great. But I don't want to get rich. I want everyone to be rich. I don't feel like everyone in society is rich right now.
Yeah.
We should all be rich. Emotionally, physically, financially.
No, yeah, I feel you 100%. Just being able to tap into that and be that. Because a lot of people do struggle with being able to have the confidence to do that. Because people are scared. And your mentor said, he's going to stick with me for a while. Like, it's pretty deep to me. I think that there is a right time for everything. And right now is definitely your time because you're shining, doing great things. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate everything you do. It's another deep question. You're going to segue to that. I want to know what your personal definition of love is.
Ooh.
Yeah.
My personal definition of love. I think my definition, I think, let's be confident, Zarita. Love for me is adaptive.
Okay.
I look at a lot of things that way. Love is transformative. And love evolves. And love has different languages. And I say that because there's all of these books and research as, what is your love language? How do you like to receive love? And how do you like to feel loved? And one of my favorite words is intersectional. Why? Because love is not one way. It connects in so many different layers of, maybe today I'm not my brightest self and I need you to just be there for me and really hold on to me. And maybe I'm not always physical touch, but today I need you to be that for me because I'm going through something. So I would hope that you adapt to that need as I would adapt to that, because I'm genuinely assessing what you need. The same way where it evolves and there's phases to love. And I think you could love someone when they're at the very bottom. And you learn to love them for all of those characteristics. But then now, let's say you've helped them evolve. You got to learn how to love that evolution of them too, right? And they might not be as dependent on you anymore because now they've identified who they are, what they want to be, what their profession looks like. And to me, I think that removes pride and ego. Love for me is pure. It's not always pretty. I think love is definitely ugly sometimes, but you have to go through those moments to grow. So I don't think it's one way. I think it's very much a transformative feeling, evolving action, and intersectional into language and intersectional with need. It really is. I'm very analytical with what love is.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the craziest definition I've had so far yet. Like, I didn't understand it completely. And yeah, like, it's got my gears turning. Like, it's absolutely, like, mind-blowing.
But you know why? Because if we're talking about relationship-wise, people will be like, oh, your relationship's so great. We want to be like you. And that's a big no-no. Yeah. Don't compare your love to someone else's. And you don't know what people went through to build their love that way. And that's why I say it's a beautiful experience, but it's ugly. You have to go through the ugly part of it, really seeing people for what they are and loving them for that. And if there's some changes, great, and you adapt with them and grow. If not, then maybe they're not for you, but that doesn't mean that love never existed.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it is. It's not 100 or nothing. No, it's a balance. It's a gray space to be in. And same with the community. If you're going to love that, if you're going to love what you do, then you got to love what you're going to deal with because it's raw.
Yeah.
You're going to see some ugly things that you don't believe in, or you're going to hear some of the most gruesome stories, because I've heard some wild things in my trajectory as a social worker. But I had to look at the love and the light. It's like, all right, you've gone through so much, but look at you. You're thriving and you're going to get through this. And that's love, right? That's the adaptive piece to me, at least, where do we want to focus on the negative? and love all the negative piece and just hold you and coddle you for it? Or do I want to focus on your growth and love you through that growth and through the hurt that you went through and show you that you are priceless? And I don't know, I think at least my language translates with the community as well. Like, when people I'm connecting with, I say love loosely. People look at me like I am wild. I think because of my connection to mental health and that quote, smile goes a long way.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to get off the phone without telling someone I love them.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. I never want to regret not telling you I love you. And when I connect with people, I do love anyone that I connect with in the community. I love you. I love Carlos. I love everyone because a part of you connected with me. So there is love for that.
Yeah.
And if I don't share that or say it loudly, then I'm keeping that love from the world. And people benefit from love. Everyone needs love in their life. So I think it's important to say it, say that you love people, mean it, and understand what love means to you, right? Because my love, what I need, no, I'm hard. I'm hard. I'm very special. But I embrace that, right?
Yeah.
And someone who knows me will embrace me. I am a wild card. And I love it. I think that's what it is. I love the love that I need, and it's very complicated. But I love when people embrace that. That's love. That shows me, like, oh, you don't want to tell me you love me, but I know you love me,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I feel you.
And I think using that same concept with other people, I love you. Don't never doubt that I don't love you. Because if I don't love you, that you did something. You must have done
you
something.
You must have messed up.
You must have done something. But no, love should be accessible to the world. That's what I'll leave you with. I'm talking a lot.
No, I enjoyed every little bit of today's conversation. We had Carlos here. We're going to pretend like he's still here. I'm pretty sure he enjoyed it too. I would love to come out and see what you're up to with your new organization and like just what you're doing, because it was very fun to be able to give back to community with you. And just that energy, like I said, like when you're around people that are genuinely doing it because it's them, it's irreplaceable, you know what I mean? It's very irreplaceable. And I'm glad that you came today.
Thank you. And the good thing is there's many people that are still doing the great work. So there's the AFSP Philly Walk that's happening 10-1 October. But then you got really great grassroots nonprofits, such as We Love Philly, you know about them, that are doing good work. And they're not the best. They're not me, but they're making magic happen in their own way.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you?
So people can find me on Instagram, Impactful Solutions. Really, that's it. For that, it's very that simple. And then if you want to get personal, my personal Instagram is Zareta_X3. My LinkedIn is Zareta Cordero. It's that simple. For those who don't know how to spell it, it's Zoraida and then Cordero. And I think that's it for me. It's Instagram, LinkedIn. Don't have Facebook, I'm sorry. And TikTok, can't handle the pressure. There's no discipline there, so I can't have it.
You know what's crazy? I haven't used TikTok in years.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Don't dive into it yet.
Oh, yeah, hell no. I'm okay.
It's definitely a black hole.
Yeah, there's a lot on that app, and there's a lot for everyone, everywhere.
So much.
It's crazy, yeah. That's a whole nother rabbit hole.
Removing ourselves.
Jumping out the rabbit hole right now. No, but we appreciate everyone here. It was an amazing episode, amazing guest, amazing co-host. Besides that, ASMR coming soon. We Love Philly channel.
Cheesesteak version. Edition.
Salt, pepper, ketchup.